I've been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off, and when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done, because we know what they did.
Cairo. I've been there. Cairo.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life, and we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome to the Hashtag Mole Edge Podcast. We are here from St. Louis this week. Becky is back. We told you she didn't quit. Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't quit, and I was driving safely, so I came here all in one piece, right?
Yeah, we had a lengthy discussion with Representative Plocker last week about how we did not believe you actually pulled over to the side of the road, but you made it, so that's good, right?
I didn't snap a selfie or anything. I should have gotten, like, photographic proof. But yeah, I'm here. I'm back. I didn't quit.
Yeah, that would have helped. And we are in the home county of Representative Shamet Dogan, and he's back on the podcast. Thank you so much, Representative.
Great to be here.
Like the laid-back look we always get to see in the suit, but you have the Mizzou Tiger sweatshirt on. I feel like we're getting
He's
to
a man
the real
of the people.
Now. Yeah.
This is
That's
like,
right.
yeah.
That's right. Christmas shopping done?
Oh, no. I don't do mine until December 22nd. I think that's the earliest I'm
you.
Allowed to
Me
even do
you.
It.
You're not on it either?
No. With overnight shipping, why stress about it before the absolute last minute?
Oh, you got to get your mailman something. I think I'm almost done.
Good for you.
I think I'm now.
Do you actually do the gift shopping?
So I will buy stuff for Sarah Jane. I always buy something for Millie and Gus, like just for me. And I buy my mom something. So I have done all of that, but you never know how much is enough, right? If you buy somebody a commensurate amount of gifts for them, and so
it's always good to have one or two in the closet, so when they outshine you, then you whip that one out and say, oh, this was a surprise.
I'll see your tie, and I'll raise you a blouse.
Yeah.
Back at you.
Whoever's getting blouses and ties from you, I feel sorry for those people.
Well, yeah, I'm ideologically opposed to shopping, so I do shopping like 3 days a year, and that's about it. So.
Okay. Do you do Amazon Prime? Get that stuff tonight? Or they'll deliver it by drone sometime?
Not for Christmas. For Christmas, I actually go out to the stores and shop for like an hour, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
Where do you shop that you can get in and out in an hour?
Just a mall. I pick one kind of randomly, Galleria, West County Center, whichever place is least crowded, I go to.
I took Millie to West County Mall this time, and we went Monday night shopping. And it was kind of cool. I think we're going to do that. That's going to be our new tradition, is take my daughter, and we go shopping, and we went and had dinner. It was kind of cool. That made it way better. But let's talk about politics. So the transitions for Trump and Greitens. Let's talk about the Eric Greitens transition. How are things going?
I think things are going great. You know, I was always pretty pleased with the people that Governor-elect Greitens surrounded himself with, a lot of whom I know very well. You know, people like Will Scharf, people like the Steelmans, Jeff Lehman, all these people, really well-established names in the Republican Party, and people I think are doing a great job guiding him through the process of, you know, putting a good team around him.
Well, I think it's an interesting thing how they're holding back making their selections public yet. It provides a little intrigue. And one thing I've seen, it's got some folks that don't know that whether the jobs are filled or not. You're seeing new names come out that are wanting them. I wonder if that's going to cause some consternation for the Greitens camp, or maybe they're finding some people that has actually better choices they can put in the mix.
That's right. And I'm not privy to all the, you know, names that are floating around there and everything, but I'm pretty confident that his approach is going to be, I think you've heard them say this, is a mixture of people with government experience and people who are completely from the outside, from the private sector, who can come in and give a different perspective on government, because Lord knows he got elected to change things in a real way, and you're not going to change things unless you have some outsiders coming in to the government and saying, look, this, you know, doing business the way we've always done it just isn't going to get it done.
Tell me one person that you've heard that you think would be good in the administration.
There's a whole lot. I mean, one of the people who's been around for a while, Jane Cunningham, somebody I've always known and respected. I think if you get her involved in education in any way possible, that's going to be a huge signal to the communities that care a lot about improving our urban school districts, our suburban school districts all over the state that are underperforming. Because Jane has shown over the years that she cares about the kids and not about the bureaucrats. So I'm very heartened by just Governor-elect Greitens' kind of position on education, some of the things he said about improving our schools, because it always strikes me. I always listen when I hear somebody talk about education. You know, you listen to their speech, you listen to their remarks, listen to how long it takes before they mention the kids. And you'll have these people giving like 20-minute remarks and talking
That's
about accountability, this and these metrics and, you know, these test scores and all this stuff. But they don't talk about the kids. That's not how we ought to approach education.
I think it's an interesting take. She certainly has been outspoken on it. We'll see. Becky, of the people you're hearing that could be involved in the administration, who do you like?
You know, admittedly, I am not... There's a few people that you hear in the rumor mill, and I don't know if I'm going to toss them out there on air. But I do think that he is seemingly walking that line, to Representative Dogan's point of insiders and outsiders. He ran as an outsider, so I think it's important that he surround himself with trusted advisors that aren't in politics. But at the same time, you need people to help you navigate the process, right? And so I think you're kind of seeing that happen right now, of trusted advisors that know how this works and know how to get things done in the building, and then also bringing in fresh faces that aren't going to accept the status quo and are going to give Missouri voters exactly what they asked for when they elected him.
Speaking of some fresh faces that Greitens' campaign brought, Michael Steelman this week joined your group, Becky, at Catalyst.
Yeah, exciting. He did. We actually got to do a little road trip to Kansas City 2 days ago, so he was stuck in the car with me for 4 hours, and he's a really smart guy, and we're excited to have him on.
That's not the way anybody wants to start a new job, is it?
Drive around with me for 2 hours? Oh, well, that was like the hazing process, was you drive with me for two hours to Kansas City.
And he didn't quit?
No, he came back, so that's really exciting. Well, we'll see if he lasts through the week.
Tough man.
Yeah.
Let's talk Donald Trump. Representative, it's been somebody that you've not hesitated to criticize. I've seen you give some praise to. The transition for him so far, he's named a lot of folks. What do you think of him?
I think it's a mixed bag, mostly good, but there's some that are concerning to me. I was really thrilled with Andy Puzder as Secretary of Labor. That's somebody that I've gotten to know a little bit personally, and who was a big supporter of Jim Talent, my former boss. And having a business person in there who understands the needs and the perspective of business, running that department, which has had a history of just getting in the way of business all the time, I think it was a brilliant move. And the reactions to Andy Puzder have been just brilliant, you know, seeing people's heads explode. Oh, my gosh, this guy actually wants to do something that's going to help companies that are trying to hire people, and he doesn't want to overpay fast food workers. You know, $15-$20 an hour. Oh my gosh.
I thought that the pick of the CEO of Hardee's was an interesting kind of shot to the $15 an hour minimum wage folks that, yeah, not going to happen.
No. And as somebody who eats a lot of fast food myself, I like to do everything possible to try to make sure that I'm still able to access that food. Because if you have two working parents, like you do with my family, you don't have time to go and cook organic, you know, kale and all
Becky
this stuff
does.
All the time.
I think the Becky
no,
does.
I'm Taco Bell, ride or die Taco Bell fan.
There
so.
We go. People who can do that, that's great. But if you are crunched for time, as most of us are in middle America, you want to be able to have, you know, cheap and relatively accessible food available to you. And who knows better how to do that than a guy who's run a successful fast food empire. And Hardee's, you know, he turned it around. I remember eating them, you know, back in the early 90s, late 80s, and, you know, they were struggling in a lot of ways. They had to define themselves, and Lord knows, he put his stamp on that company in a big way and in a really successful way.
I got to admit, this is not going to be popular, but I like the commercials. I mean,
right.
The commercials they're giving him grief for, I remember them and recognize them. I think he's a creative guy. I think it's always nice to have a Missourian. I love his EPA choice. A guy that hates the EPA, like I do. I mean, I think that's a great choice for that. Hopefully the EPA will be much, much, much smaller, do far, far fewer things. I mean, you look around this state, and you want to get those guys, you want to get folks in the energy industry excited. Talk about getting rid of some of these silly carbon. I mean, I got to say, if you could talk about making your air 1/1 billionth of a percentage of whatever cleaner, or have a job, I think that person's healthier with
a job.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and you put that to a vote, I think people are going to want jobs.
And it's not always a binary choice. That's the other thing, is that we can find ways to clean up the environment and not have it cost jobs. I think the way that a lot of these environmentalists approach it, it's an either-or type of deal. It doesn't always have to be that way. I think a lot of the successes we've had the last 40 years have been a result of private business figuring out, hey, wait a minute, we can be profitable and help the environment at the same time. So that's the approach I think everybody ought to want to take.
Well, I think there's always happy mediums. And I think with Obama, you've seen, not through passing laws, but just writing executive orders, it's went way off the handle. But before we move forward, we want to thank our sponsors to make this possible. The Carpenters Union, the St. Louis Regional Chamber, and Republic Services make the hashtag Mole Edge podcast possible. I think a couple more interesting things about Trump is I've seen that may affect Missouri. Is I've seen the Post-Dispatch for a very long time hate on tax credits. Tony Messenger says tax credits are bad, get rid of the tax credits. I've seen some certain Republicans, back in the day it was the liberal wing, fight against tax credits. I saw Donald Trump save jobs at Carrier with tax credits. Where do you think the Republican Party goes? They go with Tony Messenger, Donald Trump?
I'm a Republican who doesn't like crony capitalism and kind of these types of supports for private business. I'm a free market person.
Do you think Donald Trump made a mistake in Indiana?
I think the details of that are going to be what really matters, but the approach of and the idea that the President of the United States ought to sit around and, you know, be giving special benefits to companies that are going to threaten to move jobs out of our country, I think that sets a precedent that we don't necessarily want.
What if you work at Carrier, though?
Well, okay, so, but this is the problem of, you know, some people get a little bit of a benefit, but how much benefit is that to everybody else? And business people are smart. They're going to say, oh, really? You can get benefits from threatening to move your company? Well, I might be thinking about moving my jobs to Mexico or to Europe or whatever. And are you going to pony up for every single company that does that? And you're not talking about creating new jobs. You're just talking about the status quo. If you keep the same amount of jobs you have in America right now today, you're going to get a tax break for that, or you're going to get some sort of special government benefit for that?
What is the answer?
I don't think that sits right. And if you're a small business, you're just shut out of that. I mean, Carrier's not a small business exactly. That's one thing I always worry about with these tax credits.
If he's done nothing, the jobs leave. Guy? What do you do?
Well, some of the jobs are still leaving. That's the thing. It's a question where I think you gotta be able to trust business and trust markets to do what's going to be best ultimately for the economy as a whole, and not just this one small sector of the economy. You got to get government off of their backs so that they can move jobs. You think Donald Trump's election
may have been proof that some of the things that is happening hasn't been good? People don't like it.
Sure. Some of the, and a lot of this is the regulations. I think having an EPA, having an energy department, having a labor department that are going to be not issuing regulations, but maybe repealing some of the bad ones that we've put in place the last 8 years, that helps business in a big way. I don't think corporate subsidies going that route, building more stadiums, you know, building more big box stores, paying them to move from one part of St. Louis County to another with TIFs, that's not the way you grow an economy.
Let's talk about some of these initiative petitions that were filed. We had Jay Ashcroft on This Week in Missouri Politics this week. He said that some of them were filed in such a way that his office really won't have anything to do with certifying, and they'll be certified and be collecting signatures before he comes into office. Becky, the right to work thing is going to be interesting. Looks like it's going to become law and then maybe go to the ballot.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting strategy. I think it's a solid strategy. If you... you know, obviously, I think everyone realizes what's going to happen in the legislature this session, and there's no chance to kind of fight back against it. So the initiative petition, in my opinion, is pretty genius. And there may be a Hail Mary, maybe not. We'll see what happens, but I think it's a pretty good play.
Representative, I thought it was an interesting thing. Looks like it'll be at least going to have to collect signatures, right?
That's right. And, you know, there's all kinds of groups that are trying to get in while Jason Kander is still there. Because they realize that it's going to be a lot more favorable under him. So you can't blame them for doing that. But at the same time, I really don't like having everything in the world put on the ballot. I think that's why you pay us the big bucks you do in the legislature to figure out some of these policy questions. If something really needs to be changed in the Constitution, like the photo ID thing, put that on the ballot for the Constitution by all means. But everything in the world just shouldn't be rising to the level of a constitutional issue.
I think, though, as I talked to a person on the pro-right to work side this week, and they're like, I can't believe they're doing that. I'm like, you hypocrite. If you would have not won the governor's race, you would be putting it on the ballot yourself right now. You might have waited until Jay Ashcroft was there, but you'd be putting it on the ballot. I think it's an interesting back and forth. I thought the realtors made some good law by putting something on the ballot. I don't know that maybe that had to be in the Constitution, but it'll be. I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic to how much of this right to work debate is about the bill and how much of it is positioning for the statewide election. I've always had a thought. I think people in St. Louis know what a right to work is generally. Kansas City, maybe. You go to West Butler County, they don't know what that is. They have no idea their UPS driver's a Teamster. They don't care. So you've got a lot of Republicans that they might say they're pro right to work, and I think people be like, "You mean you don't have the right to work?"
Right.
Get off your ass and go to work. So I think it'll be an interesting thing of how is it framed, and when they go to the voters. How would you explain a right to work to somebody in West Plains who probably doesn't know what that is?
Sure. Well, we're talking about, I think when you look at the broader picture, you want to talk about people's trust or lack thereof in unions. And we've seen a lack of trust in big government, big business for sure, and big labor. And I think one of the problems with labor is that they've gotten a little bit stifling. Because right now, if you want to be a labor union member in a lot of different industries, if you want to have a job, I should say, in certain industries, you have to be a labor union member. And all right to work does is say that you don't have to join a union or pay union dues as a condition of your employment in that industry.
I always thought it'd be just leave it up to the owner of the company. If he wants a union, let him have a union. If he doesn't, don't.
Well, I've had this discussion back and forth. I actually had a couple town hall meetings in my district just last night and then last week. And right to work was a pretty contentious issue. You know, I have a good percentage of union members in my district.
Do you have people that are pro right to work, like really? I always thought the people that were really pro right to work had a really good argument, but they were mostly economic development types and business types. I always thought people in labor unions that were members were really against it. And folks that weren't in a labor union and weren't macro business types were not very passionate about it.
I get a little bit of both because I had some people, and they're a little quieter about it. You know, it's not their number one priority, but people who are in unions who kind of resent what their unions are doing, and they kind of wrap some of these issues together, you know, the paycheck protection issue of their union dues going to political activity. They hate that because 90% of the union money that's given to political candidates goes to the Democrats. 90% of union members do not vote for Democrats. So that's always a sore spot for those union members who feel like their leadership isn't necessarily reflecting where their, you know, bread and butter membership is. So I think that you have a lot of people who are, you know, they don't support it. They're in a union, but they're not that loud about it. The people who hate right to work are really loud about it.
Let's wrap it up with predictions. How many votes does right to work get in the House?
I think around 90 or so.
Yeah. Now that you can, I think it'll make leadership's life a lot easier when they can let people vote no.
That's right.
Becky, what do you think it is?
What did I say last week? 103?
Yeah, I'm around 100. I think it may be 100.
103? I'm consistent in nothing.
Yeah, I'm around 100, I think. If it goes to the ballot, what do you think it does?
That's interesting. I'm not quite sure how popular it is statewide. I think it's going to be really hard fought, just like a whole bunch of things.
It's going to be an education campaign. I think that both sides will going to... I think it's something that is, like a lot of things I've seen, in the Capitol, talk about it all the time. Go 3 blocks from the Capitol, no one talks about right to work. They don't even know what you're talking about. And I think it's going to be who ponies up and educates people on what it is and how. I mean, I think, you know, it may come down to if Labor hires a person that voted for Hillary Clinton to run the campaign, they'll lose.
Well, given
that they don't, they have a chance.
Almost all the statewide candidates who won this time supported it, so I think there is a pretty broad base of support for people that have followed the issue. So I think it probably squeaks by.
I think people that followed the issue, I agree with you. Maybe that might be the case. I just think that is a very this is always the metric on the podcast. Becky has actual friends that are like normal people and like real individuals that I always like to ask. Is any of your friends in the real world ever brought up the words right to work?
Never in their lives.
Do you think any of them know what it is?
No, and I don't think they really care. I don't. Yeah, you know, I just don't think it's an exciting issue for them. So to your point, I think it's going to be...
It
doesn't affect them. Mm-hmm. It's not a sexy issue. I mean, they just don't care. And so I think to your point, it's going to be about how it's marketed, about the education, and how they can drive those voters that do care out to vote.
And there's a bunch of political consultants this week. I'm like, yes,
yeah.
money, you know, for your election. Love it. Okay, now, Representative, we always ask 5 questions. Becky puts on the hot seat, so you're up.
Yeah, these aren't gotcha questions. Okay, so five questions.
None of them?
No, no. I can't berate our guests yet. That so we might need be to like get, soft selling. We need to get a little more popular so that like people have to come on our show. Right now we're asking for favors, right?
Good call.
Okay, question one. What is your New Year's resolution for 2017?
Oh my gosh.
And you can answer personally. This isn't supposed to be like all politically focused. So it's supposed to be like get to know you, right?
No, I'm going to have to drop some of the freshman 15 that I gained. I need to drop some LBs.
I thought you were going to say drop 15 freshmen, and I was like, ooh, who don't we like? Let's make a list.
Make some news on the air.
Make a little news.
Yeah, that's probably a lot of folks feel the same way.
Yeah.
A lot of folks feel the same way. Fawn, do you have a New Year's resolution?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
You're perfect the way you are. Is that
yeah,
what it is?
Yeah, I think get the podcast more popular. Yeah, that's what I would go with.
Right on. Okay, besides the obvious caucus priority, right, the right to work stuff, what piece of legislation are you most excited about this session?
I'm really excited about passing a blue alert bill. That's something that's near and dear to me since Officer Flamion in Baldwin was shot and injured almost right around the corner from my house in my district. And protecting law enforcement by being able to get, you know, the people who harm them as soon as possible, putting out a blue alert, which is similar to an amber alert. That's a huge priority of mine, and I know Governor-elect Greitens is on board with that, too.
Yeah, I actually recently reread your National Review article where you said you can be both pro-black and pro-police, and I think that kind of aligned with your legislation.
Cutting taxes. What about cutting taxes?
Man, that is going to be tough this year. We already are starting off in a big budget hole. We haven't even gotten the tax cut that we passed 2 years ago.
No one's received a tax cut in over 100 years. What about just cutting taxes?
It's ridiculous. I want that tax cut to take place as soon as possible. And hopefully now that you have a governor who also believes we should cut taxes, he's not going to play games with, you know, withholds in the budget so that that tax cut is delayed and delayed and delayed. Hopefully we can get it in place as soon as possible.
We're doing this here at First Rule. I saw Tom Dempsey walk by. I think if you'd have told Tom Dempsey that they'd be passing business regulation or a tax cut 15 years in the majority, he'd have been stunned. I don't think people in the Republican Party are going to want to sit back and wait on a tax cut much longer. I mean, yeah, and right. Government's going to be cut, and I don't know that anybody's going to give a damn. Unless you're working for the government. Could the state government be cut by non-MoDOT? Could the state government be cut by 10%, and would any of your constituents care?
It depends on where a lot of those cuts are going to be.
Across the board, except for MoDOT.
I would doubt it.
I think a 10%
you
could double it
across the board. Because then you're not just cutting the unpopular stuff, you're cutting the popular stuff.
Well, if you took MoDOT out of it, you could cut government a lot before a lot of people I know would care.
Well, they're schools. The schools are always the ones that are going to squeal at you the most and say, oh my gosh, you're just taking money out of the hands of these poor babes.
But did the people like conservatives or liberals?
Well, everybody wants their kids to be educated. And the public schools, I mean, they do great campaigns where they convince people that, oh my gosh, they are starving us of funding. Even if it's like the Washington speak of if you get a 10% increase in your budget, they call it a cut. Our schools here are great at selling that. Oh my gosh, we haven't fully funded the foundation formula by increasing our funding by like $3 billion. So you guys are...
So you're saying no tax cut.
I'm saying that it would be hard for us to do much in this year because we are starting off in a hole. I mean, that's the reality. We're going to have to cut some spending, which could be a good thing. But
yeah, I think Representative Fitzpatrick has echoed, buckle up because it's going to be tough, right?
Yeah.
I think everyone's bracing themselves for that. Holding their breath. Okay, question three. What annoying habit do you have that our listeners might not know? Your wife could probably answer for you, right? Do we want to phone her in?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I might have to plead the fifth on this one. Man, annoying habits. I think, geez. Yeah, you'd have to talk to her.
What if we ask her, what would she say?
Oh, man.
That's a better way to phrase it, right?
What would she
like asking for when they pulled for Trump, like, what would your neighbors vote? Who'd your neighbors vote for? Like, that's the word about, right?
I don't know if it's a habit, but just not doing enough chores.
Okay, what would your legislative assistant say? What would your legislative assistant say?
Oh, my L.A. loves me.
I'm sure they tell you all the time how great you are.
L.A.'s got him worked. What would your roommate, Jeff City, say?
I don't have a roommate, thank God.
Oh, so there. I think you have a lot of annoying habits.
Yeah.
That you don't.
Yeah.
You have roommate list.
This is
there
exactly
you go.
Why.
Exactly.
Nobody,
do you have any annoying habits?
LA, I have so many that would be. It would be.
Where to begin? Yeah,
we don't have that much time left in the podcast.
We don't have that much time. Okay, so our listeners also might not know that you attended Yale for your education. What would you say is the primary difference between your colleagues at Yale and your colleagues in the Missouri legislature?
Wow.
That's a great question.
I had a lot of drive time today, so I'm really, like,
this
I'm
is,
impressed with my
this
questions.
This is heat, yeah.
Wow. There's a lot of similarities. A lot of them are really talented, really driven. I think the difference is that when you're dealing with the kind of people who go to Yale, they're a heck of a lot more liberal. It's kind of the thing that we've seen with the Trump phenomenon is they don't understand people who are from the Midwest. You know, we only had a small amount of people, maybe about 7 or 8 of us in my year who were from St. Louis, and only slightly larger numbers of that who were from the Midwest in general. And the folks, you know, on the East Coast, West Coast just don't understand how we live our lives. So that's the number one difference.
And how much better is your alma mater than Will Sharpe's?
Oh, man. Princeton. Yeah, that's... I mean, it's a school I really don't spend a lot of time thinking about.
Was that your fallback school if everything went bad?
You couldn't see his face, but he sort of grimaced when Princeton had to come out of his mouth, right?
Yeah.
Okay, last question. This has been a much debated topic. Fake news. Facebook just came out with something today that you can flag fake news yourself, and I'm sure you have an opinion about Facebook outside of this, but what's your take on this? Is it their responsibility to do that? Are consumers supposed to work a little harder when they read their news? What do you think?
I think people need to not fall for stupid stuff. It would be nice if people were a little bit more... you know, if they'd click on links before they forward them, I think that's the problem you find with a lot of people.
Reading past the headlines is a pretty big deal, right?
Yeah.
Shavit told me off the mic that he felt like that Will Sharpe's alma mater, Princeton, was a lot of the fallback schools for people that couldn't get into DeVry. love
it. There you go.
Last thing before we go, want to get your thoughts on that. Wrap up on the campaign. Best campaign you saw.
I'd have to say it's a tie between the Hawley campaign and the Greitens campaign. Both of them just did an excellent job running the outsider angle. Their ads were just really phenomenal. Both of them have really attractive young families they were able to showcase. And strategically speaking, I mean, they were able to just go to all the corners of the state and just get these incredible vote margins, especially in the case of Hawley, breaking all kinds of records. And doing it when people at the beginning of the campaign said, really? A Mizzou law professor? Like, you think this guy's going to be a statewide winner? But he proved all the doubters wrong.
Best campaign.
I'm going to agree, Hawley had a great campaign, especially his primary against Kurt Schaefer. That was impressive. But Caleb Rowden, I mean, I think that was a huge upset. And I lived in Boone County, so I kind of saw the ads running back and forth. And his consistent message about whoever missing votes, just I mean, that's what I walked away from, and I had more facts than probably most voters do. So I think he surprised everybody and, you know, got the victory.
All those campaigns had a huge Donald Trump sweep at their back. I'll go with Rizzo's primary campaign. Did a great job. And I'll go with Sifton's general election. I think Sifton could have got beat this cycle, but you never saw Sifton without cops around him. I thought he did a good job blending. We always want to thank the representative for joining us. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
We always thank Becky for not quitting.
let your wife email us your annoying habits. We'll talk about them next week.
Yeah, we're going to do some reaching out here. Read a little with investigative reporting. And the Carpers Union at St. Louis Chamber of Public Services. And we'll see you next time from the bowels of the state capitol during session on the Mole Edge Podcast.